I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is Sunday, which means it's time for the Front 3 Q&A podcast with me, Adam Bolton, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
It's weekend. Sorry we changed the time.
And of course, David O'Brien.
Hello. It's time.
It
Sunday.
Is time.
Podcast time.
So if you're wondering why we're coming to you on a Sunday, we thought it might be a good idea to do a post-match Q&A podcast, a post-weekend analysis, if you will. We put the poll out on Twitter. 20% of you said yes. 66% of you said Xabi Alonso, which I count as a yes, essentially. So here we are. We're going to do it on Sundays from now on. Gives us a chance to talk about the weekend's action and answer your questions as well. So good stuff.
You know,
Sunday is so much better. Saturday mornings, you know, I'm not in the right headspace. You know, Sunday evening, I've watched all the football, I've consumed it all, I'm ready to chat. I'm excited about today's as well, because there's lots to get through and lots of great questions as well. Before that, the comment of the week this week goes to J. James Aylward on iTunes, who said, if Carling did podcasts, 5 stars. Now, first off, isn't it Carlsberg? If Carlsberg
it is Carlsberg.
Right, and
Carlsberg. It is Carlsberg.
Yeah, we'll forgive that. Because he said, I've listened to this podcast from the start and been enlightened and entertained by it ever since. Covers the topics every fan wants to discuss and finds an insight into the game that we all love. James, thank you very much for your kind words. If you want to be comment of the week, get on iTunes, rate and review the podcast.
Imagine if all these people had just accidentally left it on the wrong podcast and they were all like, yeah.
It's
love
the ramble.
Yeah. Really insightful, does everything you want, and we're just sitting here bringing them all in.
Yeah. Let's get into the good stuff then, guys. This weekend's biggest game, or today's biggest game, of course, was Manchester City versus Arsenal. It finished 2-2, Dave. Man City's season's going south pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty quickly. It's quite interesting to see the City side of how they... what they've become, in a way. They've become a team of individuals, you'd say, with, you know, really relying on the likes of Aguero and De Bruyne to pretty much create something out of nothing to score a goal. There's no, he's not, you know, consistency-wise, they're not consistently creating loads of really good chances. You know, both the goals were a bit of individual brilliance. So it's going to be different under Pep next season. They'll be more, you know, be more with the ball, more creating a lot more chances. But it's just, they're crumbling, absolutely crumbling. And to let Arsenal back in the game on two occasions was absolutely ridiculous.
So now their qualification for the Champions League next season is not assured. It's actually in Manchester United's hands now as to whether they can finish in the top three or four. On the game itself, though, Lawrence, I mean, Dave says it there. City let Arsenal back into the game. Especially that second goal, Sanchez's second goal, so much space for him to drive into in the second half. And it's just, defensively, they seem very poor. I mean, they haven't won a game against the top five this season.
Yeah, it's not for me. It's more that they just don't seem to have much defensive structure behind the two midfielders, and so the midfielders are fairly critical in keeping that structure. But then when that's broken down, it's actually quite a porous defence, which is unusual to say about an Otamendi Mangala backline. But I don't feel that they're particularly. It's not that they don't know each other. I just don't. I think what their problem is not so much the preparation for the game. It's more the in-game management of players such as Sanchez. And so you probably expect that from, you know, a team playing with so many different options. You know, they finished with, I think, Welbeck, Iwobi, Giroud up front with Sanchez sort of out to the right. And I think it confuses that defence because they don't necessarily have a lot of protection on either flank or good protection on either flank. And then they find themselves kind of very readily exposed. And they don't necessarily, either of them, know how to deal with that.
Mm. Welbeck actually went off. He went off injured. Jack Wilshere coming on for him, which is obviously a boost for Arsenal. Maybe England. It looks quite good, actually. Manchester United, though, Dave.
Come on, mate.
I thought he looked all right.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, in the same way that Oxlade-Chamberlain's not in the squad. What a loss.
Oh, you're talking about Welbeck not being in the squad?
I mean, just Wilshere or Oxlade-Chamberlain, they're going, oh, they're out. And you're like, they're not going to be in the England team. And you're like, they never were.
Wilshere will be, though, surely. We've spoke about this before, isn't it? How Roy Hodgson's a big fan and has said himself, you know, if Wilshere's fit, I'm going to take Jack Wilshere, which is obviously a controversial opinion, but it seems like he will win that plane. Welbeck, though, potentially won't now. He suffered this injury. Don't know how serious it is yet. Dave, Manchester United, though. So it is in their hands. They've got West Ham away on Tuesday night. They've got Bournemouth at home for the final game of the season. How do you feel about this one? Do you think they're going to do it?
Well, I think you've got to look at these games as three cup finals in a way. United were so toothless against Norwich on Saturday morning. They were awful. And it sort of goes to show when Anthony Martial and Rashford, or two lads that are under the age of 21, are the complete output of your attacking unit.
Yeah.
It's pretty pathetic in terms of, some of those players in there. Players like Ander Herrera, Juan Mata, who obviously scored the goal, but throughout the game he was very, very, very poor. Not really creating many chances. They were going too wide for the wrong situations, trying to get play through balls to the fullbacks. It was just so messy, and it's so rubbish. Wayne Rooney, again, who I've been praising in central midfield, had to go back up top, and it was like we were missing Wayne Rooney in central midfield now. Mm. Just an absolute mess of a club, and the sooner this season over, the better. If we get top four, it'll be a massive injustice because we are utter rubbish. It's unfair if we get top four. But,
you don't sound confident it's going to happen either.
Yeah, I know I don't, because that's the Man United of this season. It's so like hot and cold that we sort of ground out a win against Norwich. We'll probably go to West Ham, even though we beat them in the recently in the FA Cup away at Upton Park.
Yeah,
we could go there and lose that game. Obviously, Marouane Fellaini was very good in the FA Cup tie. Martial was absolutely brilliant. So if we those two players are missing, it could be a bit of a worry for United. Again, Memphis Depay, I don't know what's happened to him. It looks like his confidence has gone. At the start of the season, I was saying how, this could be very dangerous if Louis van Gaal continues to use Memphis Depay in this way, and he's continued to do that. And now Memphis Depay just looks an absolute bag of nerves. Nearly scored at the end, though, which would have been really good for his confidence, but he needs to consistently play on that left-hand side, or maybe even moved inside to sort of a second striker role, so he's got a bit more freedom to move around, because it was sort of like the, whenever he's come up against the right back this season, they sort of telegraph every single one of his moves, which is a little bit weird. It seems to happen every time. When he tries something, it always doesn't work. But I just feel it's just what Louis van Gaal has done to some of these young players. His mismanagement of Januzaj again. Januzaj, should have come on just before we scored. Or he's supposed to come on and then we scored our first goal, then sent back to the bench. Then again, he gets called back on 80 minutes and he gets sent back to the bench again. Just seems absolutely crazy. This player that has talent, Januzaj is a talented player. Maybe he's not the brightest. Maybe he doesn't get along with Louis van Gaal, but it's sort of Louis van Gaal's agenda now, potentially is harming Manchester United's future.
Ben Skiro tweets in to ask, is the top four and the FA Cup a successful season for United? Does it save LVG? Of course, assuming they do finish in the top four and win the FA Cup. What do you reckon to that, Dave?
I think it doesn't save LVG. LVG's obviously been brought in to do a job, potentially, of moving the squad on. He's done that, fantastic, whatever. But, the lack of progress sometimes with this team, it's worrying. And again, we've gone back to this toothless possession-based system that just doesn't create chances, and that's the issue. Fair enough, if we had 90% possession like Bayern Munich do every week, but they create they have like 35 shots on goal, that's fair enough. But if you're not creating chances and you're just recycling the ball for the hell of it, it's ridiculous. Look at how many goals United have scored in the Premier League this season. There's teams at the bottom. Sunderland have scored more goals than United this season. That is ridiculous.
It's quite incredible that they're still in the race for the top four, isn't it? I mean, that is... Yeah, they can do it if they win these two games. It's a good weekend for Manchester United, weirdly. A bad weekend for Manchester City, of course, who now have Champions League qualification out of their hands. A good weekend, though, for Arsenal, really, Lawrence. I mean, we talked about Wilshere coming back there. Giroud's drought is over. Sanchez coming back or continuing his impressive form over the last six or seven games. And of course, St. Tottenham's day could be back on.
Yeah.
Tottenham losing 2-1 at home to Southampton today. meaning that Arsenal can catch them on the final day of the season. Spurs only need 1 point, though, to finish above Arsenal for the first time since 1995.
And I mean, not only that, Adam, but they are only how many points off AVB's all-time high for the club?
I believe we are 2 points off them. Yes,
2 points
off.
Okay, so you just need the one, or would you rather they get the three? Shame it's not two for a win anymore, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I am not... I'm a little bit worried, I've got to say, because I was hoping that Newcastle would be a little bit in a better position by this point, and, you know, that they wouldn't have so much to play for. But going into that game, you sort of think, oh, God, here we go. You know, they've really got something to try and win this match for. But on the other hand, couldn't score against Aston Villa. I believe they're the only team in the Premier League who failed to beat Aston Villa this season.
Yeah, that was bizarre, wasn't it? That really was a really weird match.
Yeah, crazy. But it's...
Why are all the Villa players just such wankers? Like, just let Newcastle score.
Yeah.
Shit all over Sam Allardyce.
Yeah.
And we'll just...
Whoa, buddy. Yeah, well,
they didn't get the memo.
Super Sam. Super Sam. Super
Sam is one win away from leading Sunderland to safety.
Super self-satisfied Sam is so stupid.
Whoa. He likes meditating, Lawrence. He's a Zen guy. He likes football stats. You know, what more could you not like about Sam Allardyce?
He's so good at meditating that when another player comes to him and says, I don't really get this meditating stuff, he turns to me and goes, you must not be enough of a believer then. Mm. And then he walks away. You think, that's good meditation, Sam. Well done. You've really managed to manage your anger well there.
Tottenham, though, again, dropping points from a winning position, Dave. That's a total of 7 points from their last three games. It's 20 points in total this season they've lost from winning positions more than any other team. Pochettino coming out after the game saying they've got a lot to learn. Maybe that inexperience showing, you know, Tottenham got a lot of credit this season for having a young, vibrant, exciting team. But the last three games, hashtag mentality.
Quite embarrassing now. 10 points, mate.
The thing is, I'm trying to look at it from a certain perspective and say, you know, Spurs were not expected to finish in the top four this season. And if you'd have said to me, they weren't. Was anyone expecting?
Yeah, but nor were Leicester expected to finish in the top four.
Exactly.
This season,
I'm trying to remain positive and say, okay, look, we've qualified for the Champions League. We actually challenged for the title for the first time in my lifetime, which I think is incredible. At the same time, it's very disappointing to be ending the season like this.
I mean, it is partly because, you know, they've just dropped out of the title race, but you'd still sort of hope that, I mean, Southampton have also been on somewhat of a run. Mm. You'd also hope that, you know, the players would do it for their own sort of self-worth, if you like. But then, you know, I mean, you know, let's put it this way. You're finishing the season by finishing second or third. John Terry's finishing by finishing ninth, 10 points almost behind Liverpool, and not even playing his last game.
Worst ever defence by a Premier League champion, I should add, for Chelsea. But Srishant wrote in, he said, if Arsenal finish second, Spurs finish third with 70 points, how Adam feel about Spurs season as a whole? I still think it is a massive success. I mean, like I say, you've got almost adjust the expectations to now, because finishing below Arsenal would be a pretty big disappointment, to be honest, because, you know, every Spurs fan wants to do it. And, you know, I think there'd be banter for days from Arsenal fans. It wouldn't end, essentially. So I definitely don't want that. But I think you also have to look at it from the point of view of it's been a massive success. Qualifying for the Champions League is not something that was expected this season. To finish second or third and to make a title challenge, I think the whole season has to be seen as a success. But we'll see if we can actually finish above Arsenal. All we need to do is draw with Newcastle. That's all we need to do. It's away from home. It's Newcastle, lads.
Hopefully. Crash cut.
We'll be right. Yeah.
All we need to do is a simple draw with. Oh shit.
So I'm not feeling massively confident, to be honest. But you know, it would be ultimate Spurs to have the best season in their Premier League history and still finish below Arsenal. That would be the definition of Spursy, I think. Liverpool, though, Lawrence. We'll touch on them briefly. Winning 2-0 against Watford.
Professional performance, played number of kids, blah, blah, blah.
But Rishabh Singh writes in asking about Firmino. 21 goals / assists this season. How important will he be for LFC moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's about consistency for Firmino. you know, he's been fantastic to watch him in some fantastic things he's done. He's got a great highlights reel. It's about doing that in every game, not drifting in and out. I think it's, you know, most people who maybe watch Liverpool games will see him drift out, and that can be very frustrating because you know what he can do, but that doesn't mean he can't produce a great moment for every game, and I think that's part of it really. So I think for Firmino, it's going to be about being more consistent. And, you know, I think Klopp's already identified that, and I think there's been a few games now where he's got the best out of him, and that's been against sides maybe where he's felt that Liverpool are the better team. And so I feel like that's part of it, is, you know, giving Firmino the right environment to produce. You know, for Klopp, it's not just about the individual. Obviously, it's what the individual does for the system. I don't think you'd play him if you didn't believe he added something to the system, as well as those individual pieces of brilliance. Having said that, you know, Klopp's focus wasn't even on that today. I mean, he was on Joe Allen, who he said needs to play Joe Allen football. So, you know, obviously, what I find interesting about that is, you know, just a few seasons ago, you know, we were talking about the Welsh Xavi or whatever it is. You know, if that come out of another manager's mouth, that might have sounded ridiculous. But because it comes out of Klopp's mouth, it's sort of the press lap it up. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. He praised him today. He said it wasn't one for the LFC museum, but it was still a good game. And Liverpool won 2-0. And it also very sad for Ward, who was going to make his debut for Liverpool, but sadly didn't. So his Premier League debut for Liverpool, but sadly didn't today.
Elsewhere, the Liga title race is down to Barcelona and Real Madrid. Dave, Atletico Madrid are out after losing to Levante. Real Madrid just about holding on against Valencia, and Barcelona winning 5-0. It's going down to the final day. It's hard to look past Barcelona. I mean, since they've had their wobble, they've won 4 games in a row with a combined score of 21-0 in the league, which is quite something. So you wouldn't put it past them to win on that final day and retain the league title.
I think that's what's going to happen exactly, because the other two obviously are probably more focused on the Champions League. You know, Simeone rested both Diego Godin and Antoine Griezmann, arguably Atletico's two of the best players. And unfortunately, Giuseppe Rossi put the final knife into the end of Atletico's title challenge with a pretty decent goal on the counter-attack. That, you know, one player that I'd like to talk about is okay this season. I think he's really, really maturing as a player. You know, he got his 14th assist of the season, a lovely through ball again to Fernando Torres. You know, that's his best, it's the most assists he's managed in a La Liga season in his whole entire career. So it's, you know, he's definitely improving as a player. He's really maturing. And, you know, their midfield, as we spoke before about Oliver Torres, Saul, you know, and Koke, that is such a good unit that is going to flourish for years to come. I think Real Madrid, again, I just think Barcelona is going to steamroll in the last game and pick up the league title. But Real Madrid are coming back to form. Ronaldo scored a pretty decent goal. Andre Gomez scored an absolute belter for Valencia from outside the area. He's been linked with Juventus, Manchester United in the summer, so it could be interesting. Portuguese lad, 23 years old, very energetic midfielder, you know, very like a box-to-box type player. So it could be interesting to see where he goes in the summer.
What do you make of Simeone's decision to rest players there? Because it's a few weeks away, the final. It's not as if it's coming up in the next few days.
I think potentially, what Godin's coming back from injury. So it's probably, you know, in his sort of cycle, you've probably got to give him a rest. And again, Antoine Griezmann is so crucial to this Atletico Madrid team. He is the X factor. So would you want to risk that? You know, you are, well, they were sitting in third before, so it would have been a big, big, were they in third or were they second? Joint second?
They were top. They were top at one point this afternoon when they'd scored in the early goal. But I mean, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But it feels weird to give up on it when it's so, not give up on it, but it feels weird to make that decision when it's so tight at the top.
Well, do you not feel that's a bit of an assumption, though? Do you not think maybe Simeone believes there's more to his system than just the key players?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Angel Carrera, who came in, he's a very talented Argentinian lad, but just not the same type of player as Antoine Griezmann in terms
of, like you said, Griezmann's the best in Europe. But if you does that worry you then, Dave, that if your system relies so heavily on just one player to do well there?
I think it's going to be a lesson for Simeone. You know, what Simeone's done so well this summer, last summer, was recruit players to build himself a nice squad. That's why they have been so competitive on both fronts up until this moment. But what we might find here is that he might need another Antoine Griezmann type player. You know, when the push comes to shove and one of your goal scorers goes out, another one can step up. You know, you look at Barcelona, it's a classic example of Suarez, Neymar, Messi. You know, if one goes, another one can step up. And that might be the slight issue that Simeone would might want to address in the summer. Obviously, they have that ban coming up, so he might not be able to address it. But yeah, it could be down to that sort of thing. Is the quality of his squad. Now he's got the squad. Now he just needs to improve the quality. So it will take time for Simeone, but I reckon he's the type of man that can build something really special at Atletico in the coming years.
Elsewhere around the world of football, there's so much going on this weekend. A lot of titles confirmed. Leicester, of course, lifting the Premier League title at home. Watching it, it was hard not to feel a little bit emotional about it. Even as a Spurs fan who obviously been riding Leicester for the title. But yeah, Bocelli, that performance was incredible. To see Wes Morgan and Ranieri lift the trophy, I thought it was a beautiful moment. But also, I think that was a moment where it started to sink in for me. It hasn't actually sunk in yet, I don't think, that Leicester have won the Premier League, because it's so insane.
But why?
I still can't wrap my head around it yet that they've actually won it.
I think it sunk in for me straight away because it just also feels a bit normal now, really, doesn't it? Doesn't feel like so stunning anymore.
But I just, you know, we were saying on this podcast, you know, at the start of the season, we said, they're going to fall away soon, you know, Christmas is still going to fall
Adam,
away.
No, we predicted the whole thing, mate. I don't know what you're talking about.
They could still fall away now, you know. They could still fall away.
They did it all for expected goals.
Yeah. But it's... It was a beautiful moment anyway. I mean, it's an incredible achievement, of obviously, as we spoke about last week, and quite surreal to see them actually lifting the Premier League trophy, but a wonderful moment nonetheless.
Is there no anger? You're not angry about it, that your team came so close?
I find it very hard to feel anger because it's such an incredible story. Say if it was Arsenal or Man City, yes, I think there'd be anger and there'd be a little bit of resentment. But when Leicester do it, there is that part of it, you know, We should have won this league, but you can't really begrudge them it, really. They 100% deserve it. So I can't feel any anger because it's such a wonderful story, really.
Yeah. I mean, you must feel a little bit anger towards your own team for letting it slip.
I mean, it's hard for me to feel that anger because I never expected them to be anywhere near this position. I expected us to be fighting for 7th, 6th, you know, at the start of the season. I was like, oh my God, you know, it's going to be a real struggle this year. So for us to have achieved what we've achieved, I still just feel grateful that Spurs actually made a title challenge. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. Elsewhere, PSV won the Dutch title in the final game. Ajax drawing, which gifted them the title. Manchester United / Man City-esque scenes on the pitch, of course, with PSV finding out from the fans that they'd sort of won the title, that Ajax had dropped points. So that's the second title in a row for them. Celtic won the 5th Scottish title in a row. Bayern Munich winning the 4th Bundesliga title in a row, meaning Kingsley Coman, who's 19 years old, has already technically won the Bundesliga, Ligue 1 and Serie A, which is not bad for a teenager. Burton Albion promoted to the Championship. We should also probably mention as well, Dave, Dynamo Bucharest Patrick Eking, who tragically died after collapsing on the pitch on Friday.
Yes. Terrible, terrible situation. Obviously, we had Fabrice Mwamba, who luckily survived a similar incident in the UK. But unfortunately, over in Bucharest, they didn't have the correct equipment. They didn't have a defibrillator. So before Fabrice Mwamba was put into an ambulance on the way to the hospital, unfortunately, Ekin, they didn't get shocked at all. So Mwamba had 15 shocks before he was jumped into the ambulance. But Ekin, nothing, just basic, you know, basic, very basic life support stuff, to, you know, nothing to restart at heart, unfortunately. But it's something that needs to be addressed in the game. There's too many incidences in the, you know, the last few years. You know, go back to the Sevilla player, Pieta, that died in 2004. And I think we've properly addressed that situation. And, you know, if you're in the, you know, UEFA, you should have this type of equipment at your ground.
Basically, what I would say is it's difficult to know where the responsibility lies. I mean, it's definitely someone in the stadium, but I wouldn't necessarily blame the direct medical staff that dealt with it. You'll wait for the inquest and for people to look into it, but it's still very sad. And, you know, no professional player should die like that. No one should. There are still sort of defects and unusual things that happen. You'd hope they're picked up off the pitch and then dealt with in the right way. You know, part of it is also down to the strains that put on the modern day footballer's body. You know, they run twice as far as they did at one point in professional football. That these guys are honing their bodies to be really elite and something which, you know, people want to watch more and more. So, you know, let's see how they deal with it. You know, hopefully this is one of a few incidents, but it is becoming more commonly reported. The problem is really that, you know, the more medical knowledge we get, the better it is. But therefore, in the press, the more specifically it becomes reported. And at times that can lead to an almost hyperbole sort of nature about this sort of thing. And that's worrying because, you know, we want people to be safe. But at the same time, we don't want it to be a sort of hyperbolic nature with which we deal with people's health. So
no. An investigation has apparently been launched into the death and into any potential first aid failure. So at the very least, you know, although the death is tragic, hopefully new measures will come from it to make sure this sort of thing can't happen again. Let's move on to the question, those guys. A lot of questions coming in on Twitter, lots of great ones. So let's get into it. First up, guys, Mortada Nazir asks, was it a mistake announcing that Pep Guardiola would join City that early? Could it have had any influence on City's bad performance?
Don't know, could it?
I mean, what do you reckon? I mean, Ferguson famously came out a few years ago and said he believed it was a mistake to announce that he was retiring at the end of the season, of course, when he originally said he was going to leave Manchester United. He announced it midway through the season. He said that was a mistake because it affected the mentality of his players. I don't know if I put it down to that announcement, though, having such a profound effect on City that they're now, of course, in danger of falling out of the top four places. I think there's other reasons that have contributed more to that.
Yeah, obviously, I think there's a lot of different things to do with Man City that's problem at the moment. I think most of it is this new dawn that the club seem to be marketing. That is part. I mean, it's not only Pep. I think it's the way the club have dealt with it as well.
Dave, do you not think it, on the pitch though, Pellegrini has been criticised a lot for tactics, for substitutions, the way he sort of set up City in these games. Does that not have more of an impact than, you know, the announcement, which admittedly may have affected the players in some respects, but surely not that profoundly?
Yeah, I think that you can look at it in twofold. One is psychologically for some of these players that may not be around next season. How motivated are they to perform? You know, we saw Yaya Toure in the semi-final, second leg. He was pretty, you know, some of the clips of him running around was atrocious in terms of the effort he was putting in. Again, Kevin De Bruyne was pushed out wide left today. Scored a fantastic goal, but it was from an area where you'd like him to drift if he was playing centrally behind a striker. And the issue where you have that, Iheanacho and Aguero starting up front together. Feel with Aguero, in a way, it's probably best to play him alone. So, you know, he has the space to move into. I feel when he's played next to a striker, whether it's been Bonny or Iheanacho at Manchester City this season, the other striker has massively struggled. Bonny, you know, coming to the ball too much. Iheanacho didn't know whether to go short, go long, spin in behind. It was just a bit confusing. And again, you'd say he got some stuff right today. You know, the central midfield pairing of Fernando and Fernandinho were really good. I thought Otamendi had a fantastic game again. But then again, you've got to look at the fullbacks. You know, where's the recruitment there from the previous summer? Is that necessarily Pellegrini's fault, or has he just got to deal with the players that he's got, and then they are waiting for this next move, which is Guardiola, to come into the summer? I think Nazari's been a bit of a miss again, being injured. Navas is just useless going forward. So I think it's a number of factors that, you know, part of it has to definitely to be blamed that some of these players won't be there next season. So why do they need to perform? Why do they need to motivate themselves? Surely they're just pushing for a new move.
Yeah, I feel like the on-the-pitch stuff, though, it has more influence. I mean, you talk about it there, the tactical decisions by Pellegrini. I mean, playing Toure in that final before the game, there was outcry from City fans who were furious that he was playing. I don't think that's, you know, Toure's not thinking, fuck this, I can't be asked to play because Guardiola's coming next season. That's a poor decision to put him on the pitch in the first place, which is down to Pellegrini. Hey, maybe his mentality has changed because he knows he's being replaced. Yeah. Interesting, though, it seemed, you know, the majority of the stadium, the home fans today, had walked out before he made his goodbye speech. Now, I'm not quite sure what to make of that one, because despite his failings, they were in the Champions League semi-final this season. Obviously, they won the Premier League under Pellegrini.
Although you would say, I mean, you know, the criticism a lot of Man City fans, although people who go to the stadium, are that they are not Man City fans. You know, so maybe that's part of it. I also think part of it is down to the fact that, you know, they are expecting what they consider to be better coming. I don't like the disrespect with which some of the fans are approaching their manager, but then it's not exclusive to Man City. You know, there are a lot of fans take for granted what they have.
Next question, Dave, is Hamza, Bob Bobby on Twitter said, can Memphis make it in the Premier League?
Yeah, I definitely think he can. He just needs a run of games. He needs to be under the right management. You know, he definitely has the quality. Just feel confidence-wise at the moment, it's definitely not up there. It's, you know, look at his stats yesterday weren't too bad. 3 shots on goal, you know, 5 crosses, created a chance, you know, completed 2 out of 3 take-ons. But I just feel he's not under fluid PSV Eindhoven form. I think one of the biggest things, well, at Eindhoven, there was a lot of moves where he'd, you know, sort of not defend and he'd play on the halfway line and he'd be breaking with Luke de Jong and combining well with the target man. He doesn't really have that at Manchester United this season. You wouldn't say Rashford, Martial or Rooney are target men that are going to bring him into play higher up the pitch. So it just means that he's basically playing against the pack defence instead of getting in behind the defence and, you know, finishing very well, which he's good at. You look at the you know, his free kick, you know, coming on the 90th minute that was he was so close to go in. And I think something like that could really sort of start his Manchester United career and get him flying. You know, look at his performances in Europe. He was United's top scorer in Europe this season. You know, his goal against PSV Eindhoven was a bit of individual brilliance, and he got into the right areas in Europe. He looked a lot more confident. So I think it's just the wrong manager.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The wrong season for Memphis, but it's going to, you know, he needs to adjust and he needs to adapt. And he does know that, you know, when he went to an interview with Under Armour with him, and he was saying that he needs to improve. And he understands that Premier League fullbacks are faster than Eredivisie fullbacks. And that's a big thing that he's got to play with. He's got to make his movement better. He's got to come short. He's got to spin in behind. He's got to make them think more. And I think that's something that Memphis needs to evolve as a player. But you've got to remember that this lad, you know, his first season in the Premier League, a big move, a lot of money, a lot of pressure behind his back. And he's only 22 years old. And that is incredible. I was 26, on Wednesday? And I don't know anything.
Yep.
Very true. Here's a fantastic question from Juan Vargas. If you could have lunch with any two managers, who would they be and where would you go?
Very good question. They have to
be alive now. Let's say they have to be alive now and have to be currently managing a club.
I'd definitely want Bill Shankly there. You'd obviously want Pep.
Yeah, I think
you'd want
Pep.
I'd go Pep and Klopp.
Oof. Yeah, I think I'd go Pep and Poch, actually, funnily enough. Pep, obviously a fascinating man. Yeah, I think he'd be a fascinating man to chat to about tactics, and is obviously incredibly intelligent. And Poch, you know, it's similar, but also because it's my club, I think that would be.
I feel like you'd be making most of the conversation.
No, I think they'd have a respect for each other, and they'd want to have a little chat as well. So I think it'd be a good, you know, it'd be a lively little lunch.
Probably, what do you think they'd order?
I think we'd go down Nando's. I'd show him Nando's. Show him
really?
What's all about. Where would you go with Klopp and Pep?
Probably go to Lyon.
Lyon, yeah?
Lyon, Jesus Christ. Then
you're going to be in and out. I want to go to like some French bistro. It's like a 5-course meal. You know,
yeah,
get them
no,
there for
no,
an extended
I agree,
period
yeah.
of time. Relax, a few glasses of wine or something. It's very sophisticated, you know.
You see, two
intelligent men and me.
You lads just haven't really thought about this properly, right?
Come on in, Dave.
One, you want Carlo Ancelotti. In his autobiography, he just speaks about food for about 2 or 3 chapters, right? He knows his food.
Yep.
So you meet Carlo, maybe central London. You go, Carlo, where we go? And he takes you to an absolute cracking Italian restaurant.
Yeah,
get the classic, the ragu, the ravioli out. And then you bring along Alex Ferguson. He will bring part of his, you know, his wine collection. Obviously a big investor in wine. But he brings the wine. Carlo brings the food. And then you just talk about football for a bit.
Now, I said current manager, Dave. So Alex Ferguson is retired. So you got
to
rule.
He's still a director. Okay, so I've got to throw someone else for the wine choice. Right. No, I'm going to go outside the box. I'm going to go for Sam Allardyce.
Whoa. That is a contrast.
Get the party started.
Men. I see. So you go out for a few wines with Carlo, and after lunch, a few pints with Sam. Get yeah. on it, you know. Oh, nice.
Do some meditation.
You're thinking about this. That's a good answer. Next question is from GK Arteta Assist, who says, "Who is the best young talent in the academies from the team that you support?" For Spurs, Josh Onuma's already sort of come through to the first team now. I think the one I was doing a lot of chat about was Marcus Edwards, who's quite a skilled little forward. He's having a bit of a contract wrangle with Spurs at the moment, so he might not be there for long. He's apparently turned down a new deal. But at the moment, seeing as he's still there, he's probably the most promising Marcus Edwards that I know of. Dave, what about you from Man United?
I think you've got to go further than Angel Gomez. A 16-year-old lad who scored some pretty outstanding goals. An attacking player can play in, any of the four attacking positions on the left, on the right, up front, or attacking midfield, or in central midfield as well. And a very talented lad, captain the England under 16s, I think, and is really pushing on for to get into the under 21 squad next season, even though he will only be 17 years old. So expect big things.
Anyone from Liverpool, Lawrence?
It's quite a few, actually. I suppose Klopp's bringing quite a few of those guys through at the moment. They've got players like Brannigan, who Klopp, I think he played against Watford and said, "Sorry, I'm playing you out of position." He said he literally, before he brought him on the pitch, he apologised to him for playing him on the right wing. And then when he came off, he said, "Oh, actually, it turns out he is... we found another position for him." And then Shea Ojo, who's been fantastic for Liverpool, has come through this season. And then obviously there's people like Stewart as well, other young players. Sadly, Liverpool have lost Jordan Rossiter. They sent him to Rangers. And then there are a lot of other young, talented players in that side. So it's quite an exciting academy for Liverpool, and especially under Klopp, it seems particularly exciting because quite a few of those guys have got their chance this season.
Nico tweets in and he says, "Thoughts on expected goals and Craig Burley's idiotic rant on ESPN. It's a fantastic question I was hoping someone would ask." Here's a little clip of Craig Burley losing his mind.
One thing I want to point to is that, and you may not buy into our old friend expected goals, but it was something like 4.2 to 1 and change in this one. And if Muller puts the penalty away, then we're not having this conversation right now. So the margins between victory and defeat are so slim. I know Bayern themselves as a club aren't judging his time there simply by whether he delivered a Champions League or not. They feel that they've made progress, serious progress under Pep. But I also accept that part of the rest of the world might see it differently.
You're talking to me about expected goals in a Champions League semi-final that they've just lost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what an absolute load of nonsense that is. Gab, honestly, what do you mean, why? I expect things at Christmas from Santa Claus, but they don't come. Right? What a deal in this fact.
No, that's not what it means.
What does expected goals mean?
Look, you can go on the internet and find a definition for it, but it's one vantage point to measure how well a team played by looking at chances from where
look
shot
at the results
and chances created and whatnot. Well, yes, everybody can look at the results.
Of course, because that's what the game, Gab Marcotti, is about. Whether you like it, I like it, or anybody likes it, the game is about results. That's why managers change jobs and get the sack. Right? None of this nerd nonsense about expected goals.
So Bayern Munich, who I think as a football club are a pretty important club, and they're run by some pretty smart people, they've come out and all along they've said that they feel that they've made progress and they weren't going to judge them simply by delivering the Champions League, because you can get extremely lucky and win a Champions League. We've seen it happen not that long ago, 2011-12. Yes. Was that the best team in Europe, Chelsea under Di Matteo? Was it?
And you can get extremely unlucky 3 years in a row,
so
but you're losing the semi-finals.
And this guy's a dolt.
I'm
sorry?
No, you can get unlucky 3 years in a row, like Guardiola, and losing three semi-finals. Or are we dealing in fact?
No. In fact, I'm agreeing with you. I think he should have done better in the last two semifinals. But it's also a fact that they lost to Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's not like he went out against Dudelange from Luxembourg or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with that.
He lost against some pretty good teams. I think he made the situation worse in those games, and he made mistakes, in the first leg.
Yeah.
But this is not the only thing that they're judging him on.
I'm not having a go at Guardiola. I'm having a go at you. For coming on this show, and you're regular on this show, talking about expected goals and how that's better than results. I'm sorry, but just I'm not having that.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's better than results. I'm saying one vantage point to look at.
No, it's
it.
Not.
They look at
it?
This,
no. Jack.
Dave, first off, can you explain to us what expected goals are?
So let's break this down. So let's take every single shot that has happened this season in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So from those shots, you'll obviously have shots that are on target, shots that hit the woodwork, shots that are saved by the keeper, and then the shots that are scored, obviously. So what expected goals does is it breaks the penalty area or the final third into sort of zones in a way. So let's just do it in a real simple term where we've got three zones, middle, left, right. What expected goals will do, it'll take the number of shots that have happened in one of these zones and then also take the number of goals scored in these zones and then simply take the number of goals divided by the number of shots, and then that's your expected goals. So, for example, if we've had three shots from the centre and we've scored two goals, our expected goals from that zone would be 0.66.
Yeah.
And that is simply what expected goals is. That can obviously be applied. You can add minutes played to that. You can add other certain things.
Yeah.
You can have
more zones.
You have more zones. But usually the dudes will have 50, 60, 70, 80 zones. My only issue with that is that that's an average. That's a big average. So over time, you'd expect it to average out. But to apply expected goals onto a single game of football for me is a little bit misleading, because you're taking a big load of data and you're saying that that's going to happen every single time. Where quite frankly, due to the nature of the data, it's not going to happen every single time. But it's a very interesting metric, and if you could build a very good expected goals model, it'd be good. But then the other issues that you have is that you're not taking into consideration where the opponents are, where the goalkeeper is, There's a lot of other variables that aren't considered in the model, and that's my only criticism of the model. There's other variables that could be there, but it's a very good model. Does that hopefully make sense?
I mean, it's the thing is, yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. The interesting side of it, isn't it, Dave? Is that actually people seem to be using it to good effect within the game.
Yeah, I think that's the danger with football stats at the moment, is that it's difficult to find value of what football stats are worth. Taken into consideration. And expected goals could be good if you apply it over a certain level and you've got correlation between the player and how many shots he's taken and so forth, but it's not going to be the greatest metric of all time. And I think that's the biggest thing. People negating some stats and using other stats, that's very misleading.
Do you think it seems to be better in almost... that's what I do find interesting is, some stats seem to be better looking back and some stats are forward-looking stats, if you like. So you can say this guy, and by its nature, expected goals is supposed to be looking forward, right?
I think
a lot of people do seem to use it. I mean, the problem is most of us only ever see it from a perspective of someone who's writing an article or someone who's reading an article. And actually within the game, it's probably much more nuanced than that, isn't it?
Well, I think the big issue is that, what you use expected goals for is you say, yes, at the start of the season, what you should be using it for is a predictor, right? So therefore, it shouldn't have any bias to it. It shouldn't have any linearity between any of the other variables. And the issue that we have with there is that there is bias because you can't apply that sample, your sample set of your player from one season to a next season. Oh, no, it's not bias, sorry. There's no correlation between it is what I'm trying to say.
Do you think Marcotti was wrong, though, to say... He was essentially saying that Bayern Munich were unlucky. He was using that statistic to explain that they were perhaps unfortunate not to go through. Is that unfair of him to use that?
I'd say in that situation, that is a good example of it being unfair, because the reason why the expected goals were so low was because Atletico Madrid are so good at blocking the ball and getting people in front of the goal and them as well with their keeper. So... yes, you can say that expected they should have scored five goals in the game because they had 35 shots from these zones. But the issue is, in the game, if you look at Atletico Madrid, they defend in a certain way where potentially they'll be a little bit deeper than, let's say, how Barcelona defend on the edge of the penalty area. So you'd expect more goals to be scored from more shot story to go in from Barcelona if you're like in the penalty area, whereas right. it'd be less against Atletico because there's more bodies between them and the goal, and ultimately that's the issue, that we don't consider other variables. So quite that's frankly, for Marcotti to just throw that in there and say the expected goals won, so they should have won, is quite frankly a load of shit.
He didn't say they should have won. He was just sort of saying, he was trying to put a little bit of context and say that they were perhaps a little bit unlucky in the fact that considering
I think that's fine. That's a fine assumption. Then obviously, I've not read what Marcotti said about it, but that's a fine assumption. You can say yes, potentially Burley's, they've been unlucky.
Burley's response though was extremely interesting. I think he didn't quite grasp what expected goals means, and he was very negative about it. He sort of told Marcotti that he's not having any of it. This nonsense about expected goals. He called it nerd nonsense, is what he called it.
nerd nonsense.
That's always the best way, I find.
What a dinosaur.
Yeah.
But it did seem he was very unwilling to, like, he didn't understand, even though he didn't really understand what it meant, he was still really quite happy to just complete the shut it for down and wasn't having any of it. He wasn't.
Do you ever think that's just a bit weird? Do you ever think that's so weird that someone sort of rejects to such a degree?
Yeah, you should be open to embracing that sort of thing.
But I've never felt so passionate about a model of anything, let alone sort of expected goals. You almost imagine him. He just loses it. Like, it's so weird. You imagine that. I don't know, maybe his wife slept with someone who does expect a goal.
Yeah, he had a bad day.
You almost want to make him angrier because you're sort of like, oh, poke the bear. Because
What has Joel been doing?
Well, I think he just
makes me so angry.
He misunderstood the meaning of expected goals, and he misunderstood what Marcotti was trying to say, because he went on to say and says, I'm not having it that you're talking about expected goals and how that is better than results, which is not what Marcotti was saying. He was just simply saying, maybe Bayern were a little bit unlucky because blah, blah, blah. So, I think Dave makes a good point there, and it's an interesting point about how, maybe expected goals can't tell us certain things. It doesn't take into account certain variables. But at the same time, someone like Craig Burley, who's a professional pundit, should probably be a bit more open-minded about embracing statistics and how you can analyse a game from that point of view. So we'll leave it at that, especially when he dismissed it as nerd nonsense. I thought, Craig, mate, that's, Craig, expand your horizons, mate. Sanchez Assists writes in and he says, if Hummels does indeed leave Dortmund, who should be the next captain? Of course, the club have come out and publicly revealed that he does want to join Bayern Munich, and they will make it happen if Bayern meet their asking price. Hummels wasn't exactly over the moon with Dortmund doing that. He's come out with his own comments on that. But if he does leave, Dave, who do you think should be the new Dortmund captain?
I think you could look at someone like Smeltzer, maybe. Piszczek, obviously two players that have been around for a while. Sven Bender is obviously still there. He was captain before his big injury. Or even someone like Marco Reus. I think there's a lot of options there. A lot of these players have good experience. So, I don't think they should be worried about the next captain. Even someone like, Nuri Sahin, if he can get back fit again, give him the captaincy. So there's a lot of options there, but I think I'm going to go with Smeltzer.
Next question is from Pix, who slid into our DMs. He said, with Spurs slipping up against Southampton and having virtually nothing to play for away at Newcastle, they do have something to play for, can the Geordie boys beat them and escape, or are they too heavily reliant on Sunderland's next two games? Is there any hope left for Newcastle? Pix, I think, as we said earlier in the show, Spurs want to finish above Arsenal. We only need a point. And you're assuming, of course, that Arsenal are going to beat Villa at home. So I think it's going to be a very tight game. As I said, I'm not massively confident going into it, but I think Spurs are going to do it. I think they'll at least pick up a point, considering that Newcastle couldn't even score against Villa. Sam asks, also in the DMs, which positions do Ranieri and Leicester need to strengthen on for next season? What do you reckon, Lawrence? Where's like the key area where they should be looking for new recruits?
Well, I imagine it's also going to be dependent on who they sell during the summer.
Mahrez.
Probably, I mean, Mahrez looks like the most likely, doesn't he? Considering some people are saying it's 50-50 over Mahrez, and Kante's within that region, so I'm told. Probably another centre back. We're seeing Robert Huth sort of having to transition towards being older. Wes Morgan is no spring chicken. But I'd also say then that they've got some other really strong areas. I'd say, goalkeeper, fantastic, young, great. Centre back. bring someone in, maybe even two people in. Central midfield, you're going to need someone else, and maybe even two players. And I think maybe two more attacking midfielders, maybe even three more attackers to really give you something extra, because rotation is going to be really key. They can't play that number of games next season and play this this number of players. It's just not possible.
The main man, Solomon, writes in, he said, I went to school with a player who just got promoted to the Bundesliga with Leipzig. Do you have any connections with a pro footballer?
Adam, Leipzig has two teams. Rasingball Sport Leipzig and Lokomotive Leipzig. You've just alienated a massive fan base.
Apologies, guys.
Huge.
In hell, Adam.
What a Leipzig.
I am never.
This is big shit, mate. Commercial Red Bull down. Into football. Nobody wants it.
This is like.
Didn't you just say our pick?
Apologies.
Oh.
Dave, do you have any connection with a pro footballer?
Well, yeah, Danny Drinkwater. He used to play with one of my pals, one of my best mates from Manchester, called Chris Gibson. He used to play on the same team as Danny Drinkwater from the ages of like 11 till 14 or 15.
No.
Ooh. Yeah, straight pretty in there. Good. Premier pretty League good. Champion.
Lawrence?
My grandma's best friend, her grandson, used to play for Liverpool. His second name was Raven.
Wow.
Going to a school in the Midlands, everyone knows someone who plays for a sporting team. I'm pretty sure like at least a couple of the kids in our school played for Derby and Burton Albion as well. Burton Albion obviously getting promoted as well this weekend. Mm. And Luca Toni's my dad. But I mean, that's almost irrelevant at this point. Cheers, Dad. Thanks for scoring today, by the way.
Well done,
thanks
Luca.
For giving me a wink. See you later.
Chris Smalling was in the year below me at school, as you all know, and he had a massive afro when he was there. So there you go. That's my connection. I used to see him around when he was at school. Next question from Jude F. Would managers like Guardiola win the league with Leicester's team without spending hundreds of millions? I think not, says Jude. What do you think, Dave?
Well, actually, a cracking company called Squawker.com did an article where they did it on Football Manager, and they put in Guardiola, Simeone, Mourinho into Leicester City, and unfortunately, none of them won the league.
What?
But I think Simeone was the best. I think he came sixth.
Okay, interesting. So it must be true. Football Manager is, of course, a portal into the future. And gospel. Into parallel universes. So, very interesting. So they emphatically, factually, no, Guardiola would not win the league with Leicester.
I feel like they would, but I don't feel like their expectation would lead them to do that. I think it's partly, the herd immunity thing. Mm. I feel like Leicester have benefited from herd immunity this season.
Yes.
Everyone else was almost indoctrinated and, neutered to the point where they thought only money could win it. And suddenly, boom. Leicester showed everyone else. But now, that they've made, no one else is really going to be able to do that because Leicester have infected everyone else.
You might say they outfoxed everyone else. Hey? Hey?
Hey, stop it.
I'll get my coat.
Chris writes in saying,
if Eddie Howe can slowly move to higher Premier League teams, will he be constantly tipped to become next England manager? What do you reckon, Lawrence? He's already being constantly tipped to be the next England manager. I think it'd be interesting where he does go next, in that he's obviously been Bournemouth for a while. He's not going anywhere soon, I wouldn't imagine. It'd be interesting to see whether he can move up to one of those top jobs. Of course, it doesn't look like there'll be a post open in the near future. But it will be interesting to see how his career progresses. Jeremy Castro writes in, Dave, asking, with Verratti and Marchisio out for the Euros, how do you expect that to change Italy's style, and who could take their place?
It's an interesting one. That's two really crucial players for Italy. Conte's been experimenting of late with a number of systems. He was playing a 3-4-3 in the recent friendlies, which is quite interesting. Just trying to think of who would go in there to replace him in a way, because you're down. You're absolutely down on players. Well, you've got obviously De Rossi's. He's been knocking around for years.
Yeah.
You could throw Firenze in there if needs be. We're obviously probably missing a blatant example here of a player. Storaro from Juve could drop in there. But yeah, I think there's enough quality, but then they've lost. There's enough like decent players, but they're definitely going to miss Moratti and Marquisio's quality, especially probably towards the latter stages where you need those top players to really get around.
I'm reading here, his teammate Thiago Motta or Sampdoria sensation Roberto Soriano is likely to replace him at the heart of Conte's midfield.
Or Jorginho, the Napoli central midfielder. He's done a cracking job in Serie A this season. Get Jorginho in there. Maybe he can play that ball-playing role.
Conte, if you're listening, mate, get Jorginho. Jay Stockton 98 writes in and he said, who are the worst TV pundits? Woof. Great question. Craig Burley. Funnily enough, do you reckon, Dave, who's an unpopular pundit in your book?
I'm not a fan of Niall Quinn.
Oh yeah, Niall Quinn, not great. Definitely not great. What's your grievance with Quinny?
He's just a bit too biased for City.
Yeah, that's always gets my goat when they're it's like Alan Smith is a good co-commentator, I'd say, but occasionally his Arsenal colours sort of shine through,
It's not great. But then let's talk about the good ones. Danny Higginbottom.
Yeah, like Danny Higginbottom. He's writing stuff for The Independent as well, which is the stuff he's doing there is very interesting. What about who else has sort of come to the fore? What do you make of Jermaine Genus, who's sort of been on Match of the Day a lot lately?
He's all right.
Bland, Lawrence, you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Could be better used. Not very insightful at times, but often not used in the right way.
What about Danny Murphy? What do you reckon of Danny Murphy, Lawrence?
Fine, sometimes a little bland, very often insightful when it comes down to player stuff. Wrighty's getting better and Wright's getting... I like Wrighty as a pundit on 606 because I think he interacts with the fans quite well.
Yeah.
Not a fan of Robbie Savage. Can go fuck himself.
Excellent.
Not a fan of Andy Gray.
Okay, next question is from AKA Juice. He says, who can Barca buy to improve their squad for next season? Who should they sell as well? What do you reckon, Lawrence? Is there a key area they need to improve in?
I think central midfield would definitely be a place they want to add more numbers. They probably want another striker in there so they can rotate this team a little. And definitely a centre-back. Simple.
Do it, Luis Enrique. John Shin said, should the Foxes do all they can to maintain their players for next season, or should they cash out and restructure? They both seem like it's quite a drastic option to cash in on those players. I think the truth will be somewhere in the middle, as we said before. Mahrez may well leave, and Kante as well, with that buyout clause. But I think they'll keep most of their key players, such as Huth, Schmeichel, Vardy, Drinkwater. And hopefully they'll be able to add to that as well. And if not, make another title challenge, at least compete towards the top six next season. My favourite question this week, though, comes from Piotr Gala. It's a great question. Which of you three do you think would be the best / most successful manager in real life? Now, I'll give you my answer first. I think it would be Dave. Because Dave has a good... very good tactical understanding of the game. I think he's also a very likeable man. I've never met a man who doesn't like Squawker Dave. So I think he'd have the endearment of his squad. I think the squad would show him respect. And he's got the personality, but also the tactical acumen to be the best football manager of us three, I would say. That's my opinion. Dave, would you agree that it is you?
I think you'd be quite good, Adam. I've seen how you run your little squad at TFR.
Oh yeah,
you're a good manager. You're a people man. You understand the folk.
I think
you're good at getting the best out of people.
Yeah, I wouldn't say my on the pitch intellect would be quite up to the job. Unfortunately, I don't have.
I think you'd be calm. You'd be calm in crisis.
Well, I'd be resorting to hoof it up to the big lad, all that sort of stuff. I don't think I'd have I don't have the tactical brain to do it myself. If you saw my football manager, you'd see what I'm talking about. What do you reckon, Lawrence? Who's the best of the three to be suited as a manager? What qualities do you think you'd bring, Lawrence, to being a football manager?
passion. I think we'd make a, you know, I do think we'd make, I think we'd make a good team.
Yes, that's a good shout.
The three of us.
Yes.
Mm.
Who would be, you know, the head coach then? Who would be the Pochettino, if you will? I'd probably put Dave head coach. I wouldn't mind being like a little coach, you know. I could be an assistant or something.
I put Dave as the head of tactical yes. style.
Yes.
I put you as like a, you know, the, I think I'd definitely make you do post match interviews.
Oh yeah, Adam's a PR guy. That would be excellent.
Yeah, excellent. What would you be responsible for then, lads? Oh really? That's interesting.
Maybe motivation of the players.
Yeah.
What role do you want me?
I think you're quite an insightful person. You know, you've obviously a bit of an intellectual. You know, you've got smart ideas. I think you could. I think maybe motivation, yeah. Maybe Dave's more the technical sort of tactical side of the game, whereas maybe you're more the, I don't know, the psychological almost, you know. Am I wrong in saying that? I think that's quite good.
No, I agree.
Excellent.
No, I agree. Just a really bad internet connection, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. So there you have it. I think Dave technically would be the best manager of the three, but put all three of us together, I think you'd have a pretty good coaching team potentially. I think we could take someone to win at least one game or something like that. Guys, anyway, listen, that wraps up the Front Three Q&A podcast of the weekend. Absolutely fantastic questions. Really enjoyed going through them all. And I think Sunday's a keeper, guys. Tell me if I'm wrong. I enjoyed discussing the action. Some of the questions were about the action. I think it's there's a little bit more to get your teeth into, I think.
I agree.
Yeah, fantastic. We're out of consensus. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Remember, you can leave us a review on iTunes and also rate the podcast. It helps us a lot. So please go and do that if you get a chance. We'll be back on Wednesday talking about all the news and sort of previewing that final weekend of football. And of course, we'll be back on Sunday to talk through it all. Until then, though, Lawrence, if the good people want to go and find your thoughts, feelings, and musings in 140 characters or less, where can they go?
L-O-Z-C-A-S-T. And Dave, where can they go find you?
S-Q-U-A-W-K-A-D-A-V-E. Adam?
You can find me at Adam Boltwood. You can find.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
All three of us on the Football Republic on YouTube, go and check it out. Until next time, guys, we'll see you on Wednesday.